A few years ago, when we were talking about renovating this sanctuary and giving it a seismic retrofit, the highest priority as we set up the master plan was life safety. How do we strengthen this building such that if there is an earthquake, it will remain standing and keep everyone inside of it safe? So these beautiful steel beams that are all encased in the drywall and hold up this roof, and the taking down the brick wall that used to be here, and the new shear strength in the roof, all of those things were done in order to help make this building more truly what it is meant to be, which is a sanctuary. The word sanctuary primarily means a holy place, but it also means a safe place, a place of refuge, like a wildlife sanctuary where birds and wildlife, especially those that are hunted for sport, can take refuge from harm, can rest on their migratory journeys, and can give birth unmolested and can raise their young in safety. And the sanctuary of a church is meant to be that same thing, a place where when you're feeling hunted, you have a safe place to go. And on our migratory journeys, we have a place where we can stop and be sustained, and where our children can be raised in safety. It's a beautiful name for a building, the sanctuary, a place that is holy and safe. And that holy safety is another of the six great ends of the church that we've been talking about for these last weeks. This traditional statement of the purpose of the church's existence, the proclamation of the gospel, the preservation of the truth, the exhibition of the kingdom of heaven to the world, the maintenance of divine worship. And today, the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God. I want to tell you what that means, the shelter, nurture, and spiritual fellowship of the children of God. It means that the church exists to welcome people in the doors, to see to it that they are safe when they are here, safe from rejection or exclusion, safe from the dangers of the outside world, safe from their own demons of past failure or internalized prejudice. And then they are to be nurtured, which means supported and encouraged to grow in wisdom, in faith, in compassion. And finally, they are to be offered and invited into spiritual fellowship, the kind of deep friendship that is based on a sense of our unity in the Spirit of God. It's a beautiful vision of what the church is called to be, a place of shelter, a place of nurture, and a place of spiritual fellowship. As we celebrate Susan's ministry here to children and youth, we get to affirm that kind of shelter. You heard several of the people today talking about this is a safe place to come when one was a teenager, and a place where one can be oneself, where one can learn how to be the authentic person that they are created to be, safely and without fear. And that in my conversations with young adults and with parents of youth, I've heard over and over again, quite literally, have heard people say, that youth group saved my life or saved my child's life. The dangers faced by adolescents in this world are very real. Families struggling with dysfunction or addiction, children facing invitations to risky or self-destructive behavior, the undue pressures that they suffer to excel in too many areas, or no encouragement at all toward excellence, over-medicated or under-treated for depression or anxiety or hyperactivity. But here they can find sanctuary. There's a place where they can talk about their issues, and a place where there are caring adults who listen and who've been there themselves. And that's where the nurturing comes in. Nurture being the support and encouragement to grow. It's important for a church to be a place where people are welcome and safe. Children and adults are welcome and safe, but not stuck. The purpose of nurture is to help people to move beyond the unhealthy ways of thinking and being, to encourage people to embrace more fully the gift of our humanity and the possibilities that humanity contains. It's one of the reasons that we focused on nonviolent communication here for a while, after realizing that we needed more skills in handling conflict in healthy ways in the life of this church. Nurture to grow, supported and encouraged. And I'm really proud of the progress that we make in this church when we address, see a problem and address the issue and make true progress toward maturity. That is true nurturance. I am thrilled to see the way that this church has embraced both spirituality and social justice and found those two unable to be taken apart from each other, that they are intertwined in ways that can never be separated, and that we have embraced that unity of body and spirit and not let that artificial separation be a destructive force in our lives, or any of the false dichotomies, the either-ors that the world sets up, that this church finds a way to say, no, let's be a both-and congregation. Let's find a way to embrace polarities and bring them together in the unity of the Spirit. We've delved more deeply into Scripture and into Christian tradition and theology to discover the relevant foundations of our faith and our action and to embrace them. We've learned how to nurture one another in a new vision of what it is to be a progressive Christian and that can call us into the future as a community that is balanced and integrated in our faith and our action. That's nurturance of one another and as a community. Now, when I'm working on a sermon through the course of that week, I tend to view everything that happens in my life and in the world through the lens of whatever theme I am exploring. So on Friday, when Obama received the Nobel Peace Prize, I started thinking about that in terms of nurture and spiritual growth and that encouragement to grow. And I thought, you know, that was when people were saying, well, how can he get a prize when he has, you know, we haven't achieved world peace yet, and what have you done for me so far, kind of thing. And I thought this award was actually a nurturing award on the part of the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize Committee, and actually found someone talking about that on a blog. This is Al Giordano's blog, but this was a response to it, where this one person, Jack Duval was the name, said Nobel Peace Prizes have typically been of two kinds, to an older person for lifelong achievement, or to a person still involved in a cause in order to strengthen it. Obama believes he represents a new form of American leadership in the world, less belligerent and welcoming of everyone's views. This is a Nobel Award that is actually quite shrewd. For some time, it will coax and remind Obama to consider whether he is living up to that standard. So he'll show us going forward the scope of his conscience, the degree of his ingenuity in strategies to end violent conflict and repression, and the extent of political risks he is willing to take for the sake of people's rights and opportunities. The award is an investment in a new direction for America's role in the world. I like that way of looking at it, the Nobel Peace Prize as spiritual formation. That he now has this thing staring him in the face saying, don't forget why the American people elected you, and don't forget how the world celebrated a new era of openness to dialogue and emphasis on diplomacy. The prize gives support and encouragement and just a teeny tiny bit of pressure. I can imagine him sitting at his desk grappling with some big question about the Middle East or about Afghanistan or about Iran and thinking, oh, geez, they gave me the Nobel Peace Prize. I need to grow into that honor and that responsibility in some way. And it's the same thing in the church, this idea of nurture, of spiritual formation of individuals and of a community, that when we are facing a decision, when we have actions to decide upon, choices to make, how we spend our money or how we treat our neighbor, how we respond to our enemy, I would hope that the nurture that we have received brings that same feeling, like, geez, I'm a Christian. That we feel that encourages us to grow and that we will be supported in that growth by this church family. which leads to spiritual fellowship of the children of God. One person I remember a while ago said, I don't want this church to be like my college sorority. I don't want that kind of friendship. I want the friendships here to be based on something deeper than that, something more challenging than that. This sense of unity in God, of our shared humanity, with understanding and compassion and tapping into God's inexhaustible love and acceptance at the basis of all of our relationships. With that kind of spiritual foundation to our relationships here, we can have the courage and the compassion to walk into the darkest places in companionship with one another and in each other's lives, even when that's very difficult. I know that sometimes there's that challenge, and I don't know how to answer this one, but that challenge to balance respecting people's privacy with offering them the support that they need. And I have said at times that we tend in this church to be a bit aggressive in our compassion, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. That reaching out to people that we know are suffering and being willing to say, is there anything I can do, or I can pray for you, or I'm with you, that is not necessarily an invasion of someone's privacy. That is offering that spiritual fellowship, even at the risk of overstepping one's bounds. Introverts like me, and I think, you know, statistically 25% of the people in this country are introverts, and so there may be more of you out there, that we tend to look like we're in control from the outside, and inside we're suffering, and to have someone say, how are you doing, that can be a really big thing. So I encourage us, even with this sort of multicultural mix of introverts and extroverts that we have here, that we can find ways to be in spiritual fellowship with one another and really support one another through the hard times. Is Earl here? I'm telling a tale out of school. There he is. Can I tell your story about what you know about this church, the 2:00 in the morning one? Okay. Earl says that what he knows, that the sense of community, he knows that even if he were in his underwear at 2 a.m. on East 14th Street, he could pick up the phone and call someone. They would come down and pick him up and not ask any questions. I would be on the phone very soon with you after that. So this is a sanctuary. It is a holy and safe place. It is the spiritual home base of this congregation, this church family. It is a place where we are safe, and it is a place where we invite others to safety. It is the place where we are nurtured and where we are encouraged to get unstuck and to grow into the fullness of our God-given potential as beloved and accepted children of God, even if we haven't won the Nobel Peace Prize yet. And this is the place where our friendships are rooted and grounded in the Spirit. And in that reality, we know that our friendships will be sustained even when we cause rifts, even when there are breaks, that at the basis of that grounding is the gift of forgiveness and God's acceptance. So I invite you to embrace that reality, that what we are here for is to shelter and nurture and befriend one another in the unity of God's great Spirit. Amen. I think because of the time, we're going to skip the next hymn. It's a terrific hymn. Read the words. Carry them with you. But I'll invite the band to come up, and I invite all of you to continue in our celebration as we bring our gifts to God in response to the great gifts of grace that God has given to us.